This is J.G. Hertzler, General Mar Talker on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as always, is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. Matthew, how are you doing this week?
Doing pretty good, Chris, although I don't know what's wrong with the weather. I think that the weather system modification program may be malfunctioning because just a few days ago, it was quite warm, and it's cold again, and it's rainy. So, I don't know if Worf and his extremist group have had something to do with it, but I feel like it's more like Ryza when it rains. Y'all having that problem in Tokyo, Chris?
Actually, we are. So, it seems to be a planet-wide situation. And so, yeah, you know, Worf and his extremist group may be behind it.
Ugh, man, that guy, I tell you what, you give him an inch and he'll take a batleth. It's crazy. I don't know what's going on. Anyway, great week so far, Chris. Nothing to complain about. I just got a new roommate. I'm looking for another one again. So, oh goodness, it's like a never-ending cycle. I feel like there's a revolving door in my house.
Probably a lot like the quarters on the station, I bet.
Yes. It is, yes, a little bit like I run Deep Space Nine's quarter station, and every few minutes somebody's coming in saying they're going to move in, somebody's coming in saying they move out. Yeah. It's a lot of work.
There's always a new ship arriving. So true.
It's so true. Just as long as, you know, we don't give Andorians rooms next to Tellarites and we don't end up with fights.
Yes. Oh, it's a headache. Be careful. Yeah. Where you put people. You have to be mindful of that. Well, we had a great show last week. We've gotten a lot of good feedback on our discussion of Garak with Una. And this week, we're going to take a little bit of a different approach. You know, we've done a lot of very in-depth character analysis, and then our discussion of religion and science a couple of weeks ago. We're going to take a break from that this week and just talk about some of our favorite Deep Space Nine episodes. And Matthew, we thought we would just each choose, you know, 4 or 5 episodes that are our favorites. And again, this doesn't necessarily mean that these are the absolute best episodes of Deep Space Nine. These are some of our favorite episodes of Deep Space Nine. Why don't you kick us off, Matthew? Tell me your first choice as a favorite episode of the series.
Well, I've recently gone through and done almost an entire rewatch of Deep Space Nine. And so rewatching the series, you know, chronologically, seeing everything happen, I just had some things pop out at me. And really the first episode that I came across that has struck me as being one that I may have just dismissed before or forgotten, and I don't know why, because it's so good, was Duet. You know, the fabulous Kira episode right before In the Hands of the Prophets. And I think, you know, we talked about In the Hands of the Prophets really setting in motion what Deep Space Nine was going to be. For me, Duet does that as well, because it really sets in motion that we are going to do lots of character depth analysis on Deep Space Nine. And Duet was really the first episode to dive deeply into who Kira was, to dive deeply into the Bajorans, their occupation with the Cardassians, and the psychological impact that this has had on them. And two, in the end, making Kira realize that not all Cardassians are what she thought, that she can't just lump them in together. Very much in the same way you might, say, find a Jewish person who might think this finally about a German person. And I love the inner workings of this episode, the character depth, the story, the writing. Everything about this episode screams Deep Space Nine, what Deep Space Nine is going to become. So it's, for me, it's a real standout.
Yeah, I agree. That's an episode too, that I've watched several times just over the past couple of months as I've been doing a rewatch of the series myself, and as we've talked about Kira, talked about Duet, talked about In the Hands of the Prophets. It's an episode that, about 10, it's been more than that now, it's probably like 12, 13 years ago, I put together my list of my favorite episodes and the best episodes of Deep Space Nine. And it's a list I'm going to be revisiting sometime this year as I finish another rewatch of the series. That episode, Duet, is an episode that I love now. I totally agree with you on all points. And it was not in my original list that I did 13 years ago. And so it does show how your view of a series evolves over time. I think, Emissary did a really good job of setting up what Deep Space Nine was going to be. But then they didn't really take advantage of what they set up truly until you get to Duet, as you say.
So I agree.
That's an excellent choice. Very excellent choice.
Well, Chris, what would be your first episode, or at least just the first one that really comes to mind for you?
Well, it's hard to choose one, and mine are going to be possibly a little bit obvious here. I am going to have to just go with The Visitor as my first one. And, you know, this is an episode that people either love or hate. I don't know how you hate this episode personally if you're really, really a Niner. I do understand how people who love Voyager as their favorite series or The Next Generation as their favorite series maybe don't really get this episode. Maybe it's an episode you appreciate more as you watch the series over and over. I don't know. It's just for me, that exploration between a son and a father and, you know, Jake feeling like it was his responsibility that he lost his father. And he spends his whole life, and at great cost to himself and his career, to try to find a way to fix, you know, what happened in the past. And the writing is so good and the performances are so good. Tony Todd is fantastic. And I know it's an episode that maybe doesn't feel like Star Trek because so much of it takes place with old Jake, but I don't know. It's just one of those episodes that I think only DS9 could do. And it's great science fiction in general as well.
Well, this is definitely something that I cannot agree more with you on. I love this episode. It's on my list because of that. This is one of those episodes that I think, in some ways, I think that they wanted to be able to do something that captured the spirit of the inner light from The Next Generation, yeah, but without doing a carbon copy of that.
Right.
What I think they get is a fantastic episode that is just as good, and that every time I watch it, I get tears in my eyes at certain parts because it's so deep. And like you said, it really is exploring that idea of a family, of a father and a son. And, Rachel Robinson, who is the student, is actually Andrew Robbins' daughter, who plays Garrick, which we talked about, which is fantastic. I thought that was great, you know, to get that in there. You know, you have a daughter of somebody who's on Deep Space Nine and kind of creating that. And what I love about this episode is that it is very different. It's not the rest of the series. It does feel a little bit set apart, and it is special, I think. The music in it is fantastic as well.
Yes.
you know, the visitor suite that you can get on many of the different compilations for Deep Space Nine music is beautiful.
Yeah, it's some of the only DS9 music that has been released widely. You know, we recently got the whole comprehensive DS9 collection. But prior to that, there were only a few, like the Visitor, Way of the Warrior, Emissary, just a few that had been released. And definitely.
And the other thing that I think, Chris, that really makes this episode stand out is that what this does for the very last episode, you know, when Sisko is gone with the prophets, it reminds me how much Jake misses him in this episode when he's gone. And what Jake is going to probably go through in that, you know, post Deep Space Nine finale. He's going to struggle a lot because he can't really imagine living without his father. And we have to realize Jake's already lost his mother. And so this is all he has left of his family. And again, just a hands down fantastic.
It is. And this is an episode that I think it's the first time in Star Trek that they could do this episode, because there were no family connections on the original series or on the Next Generation of this type that would allow this particular story to be told between a child and a parent. So very good DS9 here, something that you really need a DS9 in order to pull off, I think.
For somebody like you who doesn't really like Jake's character, to really like this episode and it's all revolving around Jake, I think is a fantastic storytelling device. The fact that Deep Space Nine writers could have really made Jake something really interesting. And it is sad, as we've talked about before, they kind of lose his character along the way. But this really goes to show that Jake has a lot of potential as a character. And I could really have cared about him if they had just done some more things with him and not kind of gotten lost in the mix.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he served his purpose to set up Sisko as a family man, but then he did kind of get lost along the way. Well, Matthew, tell us another one of your favorite episodes.
Well, Chris, as I was doing my rewatch, another one that stood out, and it has since the beginning of Deep Space Nine for me, just watching it through originally back in the 90s, was Looking for Parmok in All the Wrong Places. And
now, does this stand out for you because of Jadzia in a swimsuit, or is there something more to it here?
No, actually, Jadzia is not in a swimsuit in this episode. So what it stands out for me, though...
Oh, yes, I am thinking of Let He Who Is Without Sin.
Who Is Without Sin, yes, exactly. But what stands out to me about this episode is that, you know, Worf had come on the station in season 4 and The Way of the Warrior. Yeah. Fantastic opening scene with him and Jadzia where he says, "Nice hat." And from that moment, they have this kind of connection already. There's a great chemistry between them, and that really built throughout season 4 to the point where you get to season 5 and she is ready to initiate a relationship with Worf. And I love that so much because these two characters really bring out so much in each other. And it was just so much fun to watch Jadzia just kind of toy with Worf. You know, she just has this ability to make him so uncomfortable and at ease all at the same time. He doesn't even know it. And then I also liked the Quark storyline. I really liked that they brought Grilka back. I liked that they played on that. And I thought it was a lot of fun to see Quark again, have to kind of woo her and win her again.
And you get Quark with a Batleth, so.
Exactly. I mean, what could be better? So this is just a fun episode of Deep Space Nine. You know, there was a great list on, I think it was Hollywood.com about a week ago that I had posted on Twitter, and it was why Deep Space Nine was the best. And one of the things they said is that Deep Space Nine was the funniest of all the Star Treks. And, you know, Deep Space Nine does get a lot of play as being darker and grittier. That's what everybody always says. But there's so many episodes, whether it's a Ferengi episode or an episode like this, where there's just some really fun character things happening. And the whole episode is light and airy. And you watch it and you laugh. And, you know, you might laugh until you cry. So I don't think Deep Space Nine really gets its due for as funny as it is.
Yeah, that's an episode of The Orb we need to do, humor in Deep Space Nine at some point. And, you know, I think a lot of that comes from the fact that it is such a character-driven show and that the relationships between the characters, as we always talk about on here, are so real that you get those moments between characters that are lighthearted or humorous in the same way that we would interact with one another very naturally. And so it naturally that's why Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, works so well, is that the humor in that movie is very organic. It just kind of happens. And that's why the humor in Star Trek V fell flat, because I think the writers saw Star Trek IV was funny. Everyone loved it. Let's put humor into Star Trek V, and it was very, very forced. And in Deep Space Nine, you get more of that Star Trek IV type of humor that just seems very natural when it does come up.
Well, and it's coming from a place of the characters and their motivations and the storyline itself. And it, like you said, I think the best word for it is just organic. You know, the interplay between Worf and Jadzia is just so well done between Dorne and Farrell. There's no way that you don't buy that these two are going to be, you know, in the infirmary by the end of the episode. So I think that's just a testament as well to the writers and the producers of the show watching their cast and seeing which pairings really work. And I also really like about this too, Deep Space Nine was not afraid to have its characters get in relationships with each other, because that's what people do. And it was, I think, a reaction in some ways to TNG, where they had played around with characters like Riker and Troy and Picard and Crusher, and they've had these kind of things back and forth, and nobody actually ever does anything about it. And so finally, they just get to Deep Space Nine and say, look, if people like each other, they're going to be together. You know, it's the 24th century, and people are still having all these crazy hang-ups about getting in a relationship with somebody. Just be with somebody if you like them. And so I really like that about this episode as well. They just weren't afraid to go for it.
Not afraid to go for it. That's right. So. All right. Well, okay. For my next one, I'm going to go with Sacrifice of Angels. Mm. Now, this is an episode that I've always loved. And the main reason I love this episode, one thing, I love episode titles. You know, I talked to some fans who are like, you know, it's that episode where so-and-so happens. Yeah, I can't remember the name. You know, I'm not very good with titles. And yeah, I know a lot of people don't focus on that. And for some reason, I do. I just love the titles. And occasionally I forget one. But what I like about this one is going into this episode, I'm thinking the whole time back in first run that something's going to happen to the wormhole. The prophets are going to be destroyed. It's a sacrifice of angels. And then we find out, and spoiler alert, if you haven't seen this episode, don't listen to this next part. Then we find out that the angel is Zial. And what happens to Dukat at this point, the scene where Dukat hands the baseball back to Sisko is just, I think, one of the most powerful scenes in Deep Space Nine.
I completely agree with you. And the other thing that I really like, and a lot of fans complain about this, is the Deus Ex Machina that happened with Sisko going into the wormhole and challenging the prophets. But I actually think this is perfect writing, that he goes into the wormhole and saying, look, if you don't want the game to end for me, if you don't want my life to end, then do something, you know, if you're going to be gods, then be gods and intervene. And how dare you tell me you're not going to intervene because I'm in the way when you intervene all the time. And this is, to me, a really pivotal episode as well for thrusting Sisko even further into the line of the emissary. And I really like that.
Yeah, and I never took that as being a situation where the writers pulled out this deus ex machina at the end just to solve the problem, because it didn't come out of nowhere. You know, it's been set up from Emissary that Sisko communicates with these aliens in the wormhole, and it's been set up that he is somehow intertwined with them. He has some sort of destiny. He's not just an ordinary person. And so for him to go in and do that, it didn't come out of the blue for me. I agree. I think it's good writing. And yeah, anyone who sees that as being what happened, I don't really agree with that viewpoint on that.
The other thing that happens in this episode is the fantastic special effects, which, you know, just rewatching this not too long ago, these effects still hold up. They're great. I mean, when the Defiant is blowing through the lines and everything, it's just fantastic. I mean, this is wonderful stuff. And this is really, you know, we'd always wanted to see something like this on Star Trek, you know, and it started in the episode, you know, right before it with Favor the Bold, and it just continued into Sacrifice of Angels, and it just kept getting bigger and bigger until you didn't know how this was going to end. And they really had you on the edge of your seat, because this is a 6-episode opening to a season, you know, complete continuity between 6 episodes, you know. So you came back from Call to Arms, you know, after the summer, and you're expecting to get the resolution, and they pull the rug out from under you and be like, no, this is going to take a while. And this is where you knew that Deep Space Nine was taking some huge risks.
Right. This is where it has really evolved into what we think of when we think of DS9. I mean, it was headed that way even before this, of course. But, you know, as each season goes on and on, it gets more and more into this. And you know, the idea of doing a 6-episode arc to resolve something was really unprecedented in Star Trek. And you mentioned the battle scenes, and when I look back at what I wrote about 13 years ago, that's one of the things I said. You know, this was, it's an extremely exciting episode, and it features special effects of a quality rarely seen on television in those days. And that's what I wrote at the time. At the time, I didn't write in those days. I wrote rarely seen on television, because that's where I was at that point, and it was astonishing. And you did feel like you were watching a movie, because those types of complex special effects, just, it's just something you didn't do on TV at that point in time. And, you know, this episode also shows, both in terms of storytelling and creatively, how cutting edge Deep Space Nine really was.
And for me too, I think the shock of losing Z'all was yeah, big. Especially that first time, and even every time I rewatch it, I know what's going to happen, and it crushes me every time.
But the first time, when you didn't know what was going to happen, it was pulled off so well. It was such a shock.
Well, and the way, too, that Damar does it, I mean, he shoots her, and then he's so proud that he's done it, as if Dukat is going to give him a medal. Right. And, you know, he has no... I just don't think he has any idea at that point really what Dukat thinks about Z'all and just kind of how wrapped up in her he is. And, you know, whether, you know, we'll have a Dukat show and talk about whether it's love or not, but in some form for Dukat it is. It's there. Well, and I think that's...
Yeah, I think this is the point when Dukat was a more complex character than he was towards the end of the series. And seeing him dejected after Z'all's death, and when he hands the baseball to Sisko, and he just says, "I forgive you," was, I don't know, it was just an amazing moment in that evolving relationship between Sisko and Dukat. One of my favorite episodes, for sure. What's another one of your favorites?
You know, for me, it comes from season 6, and it's actually the penultimate episode in that season, and it's The Sound of Her Voice, and it's a war story for Deep Space Nine. The Defiant gets a distress call, and they go to answer it, and as they're on their way there, they find out that this captain has been on this planet for a while, and she is alone. And so the way of caring for her is by everyone taking a rotation to talk to her all day, every day, until they can get there. And so as they talk to Lisa, and that's the name of the captain, they really start to bare their souls as characters, what's going on with them and what's happening to them. And she doesn't know anything about the war because they left the Federation space on a mission of exploration before the war started. And so they're telling her all about their lives and what's happening. And throughout the whole episode, you're getting basically therapy sessions for our characters. And I thought it was just such a smart way to deal with all that's happened to these characters over season 6, because a lot has happened. I mean, they had to abandon the station, they get the station back, people have died that have been close to them. And so each character gets an opportunity to really bare their soul. And for me, too, this was a great Sisko episode, because this is the episode where he's really dealing with Cassidy. And really bristling that Cassidy is on his ship.
Right. This is the first mission that she's ever gone on with Sisko, right?
Really dealing with that idea of somebody who, you know, she's not a part of Starfleet. She doesn't, these aren't her risks, and it's his ship, and it's, you know, the Defiant is a small ship, so there's not really a way for them to get away from each other and for him to feel that distance that he needs to make the right decision. And so all of that together just really puts this for me as being a classic Deep Space Nine episode, one that I don't know if any of the other shows would have had the guts to do, because honestly, there's not a lot of action. It's not super exciting, but what you get here is some really deep character analysis it's like psychoanalysis for our characters.
I think maybe Enterprise, you know, season 1 or 2 might have, if the story had lended itself to this type of situation, might have been willing to take this on. But otherwise, yeah, I agree. I also think it's very Deep Space Nine in that Lisa doesn't make it. And, you know, they have to have a funeral for her back on the station. And that's, you know, it's something I don't think would have happened on the other series. I think in the other series, they would have successfully rescued her.
Well, and I love that, O'Brien talks about how he's been at the end of the episode, and they have an Irish wake for Lisa, and he talks about how he's really been pushing his friends away, that the war has drawn them apart, and little does he know that the very next episode is going to be something that really throws a wrench into everything, because Sisko's about to leave, Dax is about to die, and this is a just kind of a heartbreaking episode when you then watch that very next one in the Tears of the Prophets. You are left feeling a little bit more dead inside as a fan of the show, because huge things happen. Your captain leaves, one of your favorite characters is dead, and you have no idea what's going to happen in the end of this war. It's really well done. And so this episode, I think, sets that up perfectly. And then it really, too, I think, sets up the idea of what we're going to see in some of season 7, which is some of the more fun episodes where this crew is really going to try to make sure that they aren't overrun by what's happening. So you're going to get some episodes like Take Me Out to the Holosuite or Bada Bing, Bada Bang, those kind of things where this crew is realizing they have to be able to let some steam off and have a good time together.
Yeah, and you mentioned Tears of the Prophets after this, and that's actually one of the ones on my kind of extended list of favorite episodes as well. So in the meat of some good stuff here. Okay, so for me to pick another one, there's so many to pick here. I guess I'm going to have to go ahead now, and let's talk about In the Pale Moonlight just for a moment, because let's be honest, if we don't put that on the list here, we're going to have a lot of listeners who are going to say, why didn't you put In the Pale Moonlight on your list? Actually, In the Pale Moonlight is definitely on my list. It's one of my top 5 Deep Space Nine episodes, and I think one of the great episodes of all Star Trek. because it tackles real world issues and that internal conflict that's going on within Cisco. And interestingly, you know, last week when we talked to Una about Garrick, and we talked about In the Pale Moonlight a little bit, and she brought up the fact that she felt that that episode was the culmination of Garrick planning his revenge on Cisco over the course of several seasons. And I had not really thought about it that way before, but when you put that in there, it makes me like the episode even more, because it makes it even more multifaceted into the kind of the devious nature and the uncertainty of decisions that we have to make, and, you know, the needs of the many and the needs of the few, and how do you balance that, and how do you hold true to your ethics and your beliefs, but still perform your duty as an officer and to protect those within the Federation at the same time.
I would put this on my list, but it's always on my list.
It's always there, episode. I know.
You're right. It can't not be. And I think that what makes this such a great episode is that it leaves you asking the big questions without giving you the answers, because there aren't any answers to this question. What Cisco has to go through in this episode is the same thing that people have been having to go through when it comes to war and protecting those that they love, the countries that they love, the ideas that they love. How do you do that? And I think this episode does that beautifully, and it challenges us in a way that no other episode of Star Trek does, because it puts a mirror in front of us and makes us look at ourselves and ask the question. And that's what Star Trek is all about.
Yeah, I agree. And the idea that they would do that with a Starfleet captain is something that I think, as a fan, you just never believed that they would ever go there. But they did, and Sisko's the perfect character with which to tell that kind of story. And it's only in the movies with The Next Generation where I think we get just a little bit of this with Picard, like in the case of Insurrection, especially a little bit, but still nothing like In the Pale Moonlight. Okay, well, this episode, of course, you know, fans, we talk about this one over and over and over, but it had to be on the list. one of the most brilliant Star Trek episodes that I think everyone should definitely see. What's next up for you, Matthew?
Well, for me, it's a Nog episode. It's Only a Paper Moon. And
Yes.
For me, it's a standout episode because, again, it's a character piece, but they're really taking into account the impact that war has on people. And, you know, watching all the extras, we learn that, you know, they needed there to be a toll in this war. You know, Jen Zia died. The Defiant will get destroyed. And Nog would lose his leg. That those would be the things that would happen, as well as Sisko joining the Prophet. So if you haven't watched Deep Space Nine before, I just completely destroyed the storyline.
Well, I hope anyone listening at this point in the orb has seen the whole show.
I hope so too. But so getting to this episode of Nog finally coming back to what happened to him, of losing his leg and being so depressed, you know, this isn't something that we saw very much on Star Trek at all, really dealing with the aftermath of things. But of course, Deep Space Nine always deals with the aftermath of things. And I really appreciated this about this episode, and watching Nog trying to find a way to go on living after being so scared and not being able to let go of that fear. That fear is just really driving him, I think, is a really beautiful thing. And to watch him play this out with Vic, to me, was fantastic. And it's really played out well, too, because Vic's world is illusionary. It's not real. And
right,
it's so easy for us to get lost in things that aren't real when things happen to us. And so we tend to start hiding behind our, you know, iPhones or our computer screens, our facades and our masks that we wear for other people. We start putting all this stuff together that keeps us safe, quote unquote, but it also destroys us inside. And I liked, again, Deep Space Nine is dealing with some really big issues, and you don't have to be somebody who's just gone through war to experience what Nog is experiencing. It could just be a traumatic incident in your life, losing somebody you love, not being able to find a job for a very long time. Just lots of different things can happen to you that can bring you to this point of wanting to completely retreat into a world
right.
all your own.
Well, you know, a lot of people in that case, too, will retreat into drugs or into alcohol, and it's not really Star Trek's way to portray these people in the future as succumbing to drugs or alcohol. I think the only sustained time we really see that is in Enterprise when it does happen to T'Pol. But here, you know, the holosuite is kind of a substitute for that. Like you said, Nog is, he's retreating from reality. He's living in this other world. But instead of it being a world that is induced for him by drug or alcohol abuse, he's abusing the holosuite, essentially, in this case. And just as when you have a loved one or, you know, friend who is having problems with drugs or alcohol and you have to intervene, we do see that same thing here where they have to go in, they have to intervene with Nog, kind of pull him back into reality, but they do it in a very Star Trek way. And they do it in a way where I think that it, maybe it does make it a little bit more accessible to all of us who, you know, those of us who have been fortunate enough not to have dealt personally with those types of addictions, drugs or alcohol. But certainly we've had those hardships and those strifes, traumatic experiences in our lives. And we can see in Nog, you know, how we may have to deal with those. And like you said, the fact that it was a repercussion of the war, there are consequences to things that happen. And that is also very DS9. And the music is great. So
it is. Just spending all that time too at Vix was fantastic. I love James Darren and his portrayal of Vic yeah. Fontaine. And I also really love too that how smart Vic is, you know.
Yeah.
He has all these, in some ways, these 20th century smarts that almost sometimes seem better than the 24th century ones. It's almost as if, in some ways, humanity's lost a step in the 24th century. They're kind of out of touch with what it means to be human sometimes.
Yeah.
And I like that.
It's portrayed that way on Star Trek, yeah.
And especially Deep Space Nine. And Vic really gets to kind of push up against that and really challenge the 24th century ideals and to see whether they hold up. And I think this episode does a great job of showing that sometimes they just don't. That there's something kind of missing. And I like that I have to think about that. You know, is where is humanity going and what are we going to be? And even then, we're not going to have it all figured out, especially if we kind of look back and think, oh, well, they were just morons. They don't know anything because it was in the past. But, you know, that's just a bad motif of history that we always think we're smarter than those who came before us.
Right.
And yeah. It's only partially true. And so a lot of ways, we're just as blind to the things around us. So it's yeah. It's a great episode that it can make me think about all these different types of things.
It is a great episode. It's a very deep, very multi-layered episode. And it shows even a character like Vic on DS9. I mean, the fact that you can do an entire episode like this with Vic Fontaine and Nog shows the depth of the cast of this series and the depth of the character development in the series, that two very minor characters can carry an entire show, and not only carry a show, but do a show that ends up on the top 10 list of so many fans.
Well, and it, like you said, I'm not bored in it at all.
Right.
I'm completely enthralled by it. You know, I'd honestly wouldn't have minded necessarily if, Nog had been there for a couple of episodes. And
now, you're not suggesting Nog and Vic would be like bosom buddies there, right?
I think Nog and Vic are the new bosom buddies. They're the bosom buddies of the 24th century. I think we have our brand new Star Trek show.
Sounds like it. All right, well, I'll take us in a lighter direction here for my next one. And I know this is, again, it's an obvious one, and I'm going to redo my list after my next rewatch of the series, and I'm sure my list is going to change a lot. But I am going to throw Trials and Tribulations out here, and I'm going to do it for a couple of reasons. One, it's just fun. Another one is, it was just so fantastic to see, at this point in time, when this episode came out, it was the 30th anniversary of Star Trek, and to see the original series again, to see those uniforms and to see the Enterprise and to see how well especially Jadzia fits in to this time period. And I'm not just talking about the fact that Terry Farrell looks fantastic in the red skirt, but it's the hair, it's the attitude, it's just everything about Jadzia in this episode. You totally believe that she's comfortable in this time period because of Curzon. And the other thing is that I think it's unexpected. And I think maybe a lot of fans, Star Trek fans who never got into DS9, because there are a lot of those fans, don't realize that of all the series, Deep Space Nine is the series that paid the greatest homage to the original series.
I remember watching this episode for the first time and just marveling at what was on screen in front of me, and mainly because we hadn't seen anything like this except for Forrest Gump.
Right, and this was right after Forrest Gump. Yeah.
We're talking millions and millions and millions of dollars get spent on a film to do the special effects in there. They're doing this on a show that costs, what, at that point, maybe,
I don't remember what the budget was per episode, but certainly they did not have a major motion picture film budget to pull this off. Yeah.
And not only that, but they had to recreate the Enterprise, which looked fantastic, as well as the K-7 space station, because neither of those they were able to use any kind of models for. And all of it works together seamlessly. And just the way that the writers had, you could tell that they had watched this episode a billion times, because they put every single scene that Deep Space Nine characters were in and just made it work. And my favorite has to be when they are looking for Churls and they keep throwing them out of the compartment, and they're the ones that keep hitting Kirk in the head.
I love that. Just brilliant. Yeah, I love that, because now when I watch The Trouble with Tribbles and I see Kirk there and the Tribbles are coming out, I always imagine that they're up there throwing them at him.
Exactly.
The way it all ties together.
When you don't see the Deep Space Nine characters in there in The Trouble with Tribbles, you're thinking,
but
well,
you know,
just
they're
off
there.
Screen, they're right there.
Yeah, you know they're there. This whole episode was just, the way they were able to blend the characters and blend the story and blend the writing, and it all fits together so seamlessly. And the way they were able to still tie it into Deep Space Nine by using the Orb of Time as the catalyst for setting all these events into motion as well. You know, they had to find a way, how is it going to make sense that our characters are going to be there on the K-7 station? You know, they could have come up with some convoluted thing where, you know, they were thrown backwards in time by some just random event in the universe. But instead, they actually still tied that in to the Bajoran religion and to the orbs. And it just made perfect sense. So this was just a fabulous tribute to the original series. And, you know, at the end of Enterprise, when they do These Are the Voyages, and that's supposed to be a Valentine to Star Trek, this episode is a Valentine to Star Trek.
Right. Or when Voyager does Flashback and, you know,
Flashback
Deep Space Nine.
Flashback worked fairly well. I was okay with Flashback, which was actually done at the same time as this episode. They were both, those were the 30th anniversary tributes. But Flashback doesn't work as well as this one does, I will agree.
Yeah, I think just at least when you put them in the same, when you put them side by side, you know, one really just doesn't stand up to the other.
Right. And, well, these aired at the same time. Yeah, exactly. These aired together. And so, yeah, you could definitely see that the Deep Space Nine team came up with a better concept and executed it better than the Voyager team did. Although I like Flashback pretty well myself. The catalyst for it is kind of weird, though.
Yeah, we can talk about that on the Ready Room one day, but yeah. I don't like Flashback.
I don't think we've ever done Flashback on the Ready Room, so yeah, we should do that sometime. Why don't we do one more episode each and then wrap up the show here? So give me one more of your favorites.
You know, one of the episodes that I really enjoy, and it's because it is an episode that Deep Space Nine did something really cool. They took the idea of exploring the Bajoran people from somebody else's point of view other than a Bajoran. And I really liked the episode Explorers with Sisko. And the fact that, you know, he got really interested in something from Bajor that didn't have anything necessarily to do with the prophets. But this is one of those episodes where you could see that something was kind of really building inside of him. Enjoyment and kind of fascination with the Bajoran people, their history. And I really liked to see what a captain does in his off time like this. You know, he becomes kind of obsessed with it, but he also decides to do something we've never seen any captain do before. He builds his own ship by hand with the same tools that they would have used a very long time ago. And I just thought the whole episode was really fantastic. It's just a beautiful job visually, too. The creation of this ship by the art department was wonderful. And then, of course, this is also the episode where Bashir and Miles really get close. This is the one where they spend the afternoon drinking together because his friend from med school doesn't remember him. The girl that actually was the valedictorian doesn't really remember him. And so I really enjoyed just this whole episode. It had the Miles and Julian that I love. And then it had this great Sisko storyline with him and Jake. And Sisko just doing something really unique for a captain. And I like being able to see that. I like being able to see the different sides of somebody like Benjamin Sisko.
And this also is a great, you know, Sisko-Jake story, the father and son, you know, adventure going out. And one thing I always remember, too, from this episode is just the design of the ship and also the costume design in this episode is fantastic. It's a very visually unique and visually striking episode. And this was early CGI work, too. The Bajoran ship here is computer-generated. And at this point, they were still, you know, quite reluctant to use CGI. At this point, you were still doing mainly model work. I know Babylon 5 had been doing all CGI stuff, but, you know, to be honest, and I may offend some people out there, I don't think Babylon 5 is a very good-looking show. Stories may be good, but the CGI really feels like computer graphics in Babylon 5. So it was quite impressive to me what they were able to do here in this episode with the CGI. And just visually, I think I actually remember this episode more for its visuals than I do for the story itself.
Well, and the sail work here is actually just as good as the sail work on the huge collector in Insurrection. And that's a movie. And so, the work that they really put into these episodes really shines. And you're right. I found it really beautiful, the design work that they gave us. And this is also a really cool episode because we learned that Bajorans were actually the first ones to make contact with the Cardassians, not the other way around. And it's because these ships have gotten caught in these tachyon waves, and it propelled them into warp, even though they shouldn't be able to go to warp in the first place. So this is just one of those episodes that's really fantastic. They kind of used a little bit of Star Trek technobabble, but it gave us a really cool... It just gave us this really neat reversal of history, and it's all because Sisko decided to try something that is really unique for people in Starfleet to do something like this. Yeah. And this is one of those places where one of Sisko's obsessions doesn't, you know, go crazy or anything like that. It just really it reminded me a lot of how he likes to cook. He really gets into it. He wants to do it well. In the same way, he likes this ship design. He thinks it's beautiful. He wants to see what this would really be like. He wants to get his hands dirty. And Sisko's really that kind of guy. He wants to do it himself. And so for me, it's just a great episode about him.
Definitely so. Definitely so. Okay, well, I'll give you one more to wrap up the show here. And thinking about which one I'm going to pick next, again, kind of obvious ones, it's kind of a toss-up. I love Far Beyond the Stars. We've talked about that one quite a lot. I think I'm actually going to go with Past Tense as the last one that I bring up today. And Past Tense was another early example of how DS9 could do very, very serious commentary and dig into very important issues. What I also like about it is that I've always wanted to fill in those blanks in Star Trek. And, you know, that's part of what they later tried to do with Enterprise a bit. But you kind of want to know, you know, how did we get from our present day situation to the 23rd century with Kirk and Spock, and then off to the 24th century where DS9 takes place? We know about first contact with the Vulcans, but we don't really know a lot about what happened in between. And at least this was a case where our characters were able to go back to Earth at a very pivotal point in history, the year 2024, and to find out how the situation that we have today, we had it when this episode first aired, and we still have it today, and I think even a little bit more so today, the situation socially, with jobs, with the divide between those who have and those who don't, spirals out of control to a point where it almost destroys the society. And people have to wake up. And, you know, like, I keep hoping in the world today that people are going to wake up to some of the stuff that's going on. And it hasn't happened yet. But here they show that moment in time when it does happen.
Well, and you watch this episode and you really... you can't help but think of the things we've seen on TV recently in the last few years with Occupy Wall Street, you know, and what that looks like with these sanctuary districts that they go into. So you really see these pictures in your mind that you've already seen just in reality on our televisions and in big cities across the nation. And I also really like in this episode that this is one of those places where Sisko's not afraid to act and to do what he thinks is best. And this is really a Kirk moment to me for him, that he's going to do whatever it takes to make sure history is secure. And if that means that he needs to be a part of it and to become Gabriel Bell, just a bold move for Sisko, who at this point is still just a commander. And I really appreciate them kind of taking that bold step.
Yeah, you mentioned the Occupy Wall Street movement. We actually did Past Tense on the Ready Room right around the time that Occupy Wall Street was taking place, because it was incredible foreshadowing by Star Trek, because a lot of what was happening with those camps and the Occupy Wall Street movement was like straight out of Past Tense. It was, you felt like Past Tense was starting to come true a little bit, and it was kind of scary, and we still don't know, you know, it's not necessarily over yet where all this is headed. But this was just really, really effective storytelling by Deep Space Nine. I've always loved these two episodes from the first time they aired. I like them every time I watch them. I like them more and more. I wish that somewhere they had gone back so we could find out what happened to those people after the sanctuary districts were closed, because that's the next bit of the puzzle. And that's, you know, it's great to wake up. It's great to tear down this kind of oppression that's taking place. But what happens next? And I am a little disappointed that we never got to find out that on Deep Space Nine. But nevertheless, this is definitely always up there at the top of my list. Well, Matthew, we've talked each about four episodes that are our favorites. And I have a long list of others that I love as well. I have mine posted over on Trek FM. It might be interesting for you to put together an extended list sometime as well that people can go and look at. And then I'm going to be doing mine over again, hopefully by the end of this year, as I go through an entire rewatch. And I have a feeling that my list is going to change quite drastically, because actually Children of Time is an episode that I hated the first time around, and I love it now because of the Kira Odo relationship.
Yeah, I agree with you. I really like that episode too. That's and I didn't ever have a problem with it, and I think the older I get, the more I like it.
I agree.
It's one of those fun things that happens.
Definitely. Well, let's tell everyone where to find us if they'd like to share their thoughts on any of these episodes we've talked about, or tell us, you know, what are your favorite episodes of Deep Space Nine and why? A great place to do that is over on our forums at trek.fm/forums. There's a section for The Orb and there's a section for Deep Space Nine. We invite you to go over there, start some threads, tell everyone about your favorite episodes of Deep Space Nine, and let's get some discussion going there. If you'd like to send us an email, you can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send to a show and send to The Orb. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm and over on Twitter under username trekfm. Matthew, what if our listeners would like to talk to you personally?
Well, yes, you can check me out on Twitter at MattRushing02. They're tweeting about all sorts of different things. So please give me a follow and let me know you're following me. And hopefully we get have a great conversation about your favorite Deep Space Nine episodes or anything else. Star Trek or unrelated to Star Trek as well. Enjoy talking about all sorts of different things. And then, of course, do the book reviews and literary treks with you on the site as well, Chris. Where can we find you?
If you'd like to find me, you can find me on Twitter as well. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. You can find me pretty much everywhere in social media under that username. And I'm, you know, tweeting about Star Trek, of course, and music and Japan and design and sports ball sometimes, all kinds of stuff. So give me a follow and send me an at reply and let me know that you followed. And I'd love to chat there. You can also find me elsewhere on the network every week doing The Ready Room, which I mentioned a few times during the show today. Matthew is with me sometimes on that, as well as other hosts from various Trek FM shows, other friends of the show like Larry Nemechek, others from the Star Trek world, and check that out. We talk about all five of the series on that show, as well as lots of news with a bit more of a humorous angle than we do here on The Orb. And Matthew, we'd also like to thank everyone who has rated us in iTunes. We've gotten several more five-star reviews, as well as some fantastic written reviews on iTunes recently. And we really thank everyone for their support. That helps people find the show in iTunes, apparently. And we just love hearing from you. So thank you so much for that.
Well, thank you, everyone, for joining us. And we'll see you next time as we gaze into the orb.